From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the strange and unexplained. Here's what's happening. Well, as we got off the air last night, the serial bomber who terrorized Austin, Texas for three harrowing weeks was finally apprehended because he blew himself up. He's been identified just hours after he blew himself to bits with his own device as the police closed in. Mark Anthony Condit, 24 years old, was named as the bomber. A picture of Condit in 2013 from his mother's Facebook page was authenticated by the Austin American-Statesman, a paper there. Condit was killed near the motel that he had traced to by authorities using surveillance footage from a Federal Express drop-off store and cell phone triangulation technology. It was amazing police work. He died after fleeing the motel in a car with police hot on his trail. He drove into a ditch, sparking the fatal confrontation. As police approached the car, he blew himself up with one of his devices. And he also left, apparently, a 25-minute confession to his deadly crime, saying that he had made seven bombs. All seven have now been used, so hopefully there aren't any more out there in the system. Dr. John Curtis, who's been with us on this story, onlinecolumnist.com. John, amazing police work.
Oh, it was incredible. Well, we said it last night. I said once he went to that FedEx, you know, they're going to get a videotape of his license plate. And it was going to, you know, they were going to track him down from there. But, you know, the thing that really is most disturbing about this, George, as you look at the bigger picture, is the family and the friends basically all saying what a wonderful kid he was.
Yeah, it was weird.
He came from a perfect family. And the grandmother's statement is the most revealing because she's essentially telling the police and the media, butt out, back off. We have a good family. We're God-fearing people. There's nothing wrong with us. We're a perfect family kind of thing. And we're grieving the loss of our wonderful Mark. Well, look, this is a guy that, you know, who took his own life, blowing himself up. He could have blown up a police officer if we were a little bit closer to him. Thank goodness they were away from that vehicle. But the audacity of this, you know, this very carefully prepared statement saying, don't ask us any questions about this guy. He had an arsenal of bomb-making material and components, you know, in his home that he co-owned with his father. He had two roommates. How credible is it to believe that his roommates knew nothing about this? Like you said, seven bombs were produced. This guy would have gone on terrorizing that Austin neighborhood indefinitely had he not, you know, done the stupid thing of driving into a FedEx with all the security cameras that they have. And it's just astonishing to me that, oh, no, we can't tell you anything about him. Give us privacy.
Well, and I got to tell you, John, I mean, it is a bizarre story. Apparently, he wasn't on any kind of drugs or anything like that. He left the 25-minute confession, and in the confession, he really just babbled on and on and on about his challenges and his life. Man, it's weird, isn't it?
Well, and what does that tell you? It tells you he fits the profile, George, and we've gone over this, you know, whether it was the shooter in Parkland, whether it was the lunatic in Las Vegas. All these people are, you know, they have the same characteristics. They're misanthropes. They're isolated. They don't get along. They have a vendetta against the world. They've incurred rejection and rejection socially, maybe by women, maybe by men. They have built up this hatred, this resentment, and, you know, and who knows whether the kid, they'll come out that he was, you know, the drug panels take a little bit more than just, you know, 24 hours to get the final results. But we may find that he was on some kind of known antidepressant medication. We could, you know, which have been known, at least a lot of anecdotal evidence, to create violent episodes in people, crazy stuff, suicidal behavior. And yet that's completely denied by the medical profession, the psychiatric profession. They prescribe these drugs like they're candy, like they're vitamins, basically, to people, to children, adolescents, young adults, older adults, everybody's getting these drugs. Not just, I'm not talking about street drugs like heroin or weed or anything like that. I'm talking about prescribed medications. We don't know what was really wrong with this kid. We know that anyone who is going to blow people up like this has got a screw loose, several of them, and you know they desperately need some kind of help before they engage in these violent episodes.
Exactly. John, thank you so much. You can track John's work onlinecolumnist.com. Israel, for the first time, has admitted that it bombed a suspected Syrian nuclear reactor in 2007 and said that the strike should be a warning to Iran that it would not be allowed to develop nuke weapons at all. A woman from Spain is dead after having an allergic reaction to a live bee acupuncture procedure where bee stings are used instead of nails. The 55-year-old patient was receiving a treatment to relieve tight muscles and stress, according to a study group. Previous studies have indicated that weight gain can reduce one's sensitivity to the taste of food, and that this effect can be reversed when the weight is lost again. But it's unclear as to how this phenomenon arises. The ashes of world-famous physicist Stephen Hawking, who died last week, will be interred in London's Westminster Abbey near the graves of groundbreaking scientists Sir Isaac Newton and Charles Darwin. China's first prototype station, space station, will become crashing down to the planet between March 30th and April 6th. Now, where will it hit? Some people are guessing New York, Barcelona, Beijing, Chicago, Istanbul, Rome, maybe Toronto. Space historian Robert Zimmerman with us. Robert, do they really even know where it's going to crash?
Nope, we have no idea. We have some good estimates. I've put up on Behind the Black, I'm a post on this, a pretty good map that shows the higher probability locations. And the highest probability are the middle latitudes of either the northern or southern hemisphere, and it's about a 50-50 chance between those two middle latitudes. Southern middle latitudes is not, there's nothing much there. It's almost all ocean. But the middle latitudes of the northern hemisphere, you named all the big cities. They're right in the scope of this. So it's about a 50-50 chance. They've narrowed the window to, as you said, the first week in April. That'll get tighter as we get closer. This is not a full-size space station. It's a half-sized module. Think of the modules on ISS. Each one of them is about half size of that. So, you know, even here, there's not a lot of debris that's going to hit the ground, but it could come down. There is a chance this is going to come down over a big city. That is absolutely still a chance.
That's what we just need. Robert, thanks so much. Robert's website, behindtheblack.com. In a moment, we are going to be talking about the magnificent soul. That's right, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We have another George for you for the next couple hours. George Walter Chez has been following his inner guidance throughout his life. He received a Master of Science degree in Mechanical Engineering from MIT back in 1985. And through vision quests, he tapped into his soul and uncovered a novel three-part triality of human consciousness that opens the door to a deeper understanding of intuition and the divine soul that resides in the human heart. His book is called The Magnificent Soul. George, welcome to the program. It's going to be easy calling you by that name.
Thank you. Thank you, George. I'd like to express my gratitude to the entire Coast to Coast crew. I especially want to thank Lisa for calling me and inviting me to share what my soul has taught me. I also want to thank all the listeners for being open-minded people who are willing to consider alternative ideas and information that many people are not willing to consider. It's truly a joy to share groundbreaking perspectives with receptive people. And finally, I want to thank you, George, for being such a gracious and supportive host.
Wow, thank you, George. And I got to tell you, this audience that is going to participate with you in phone calls next hour, you will find to be one of the most incredible ever for a talk radio program. I mean, they just get it. They're into things, they understand them, and you're going to have some fun with that. Now, tell me a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I've followed my intuition my whole life. I didn't read much. I went through school and didn't study, didn't do homework, but I had this knack for getting the right answers. And it took me all the way to a master's at MIT, and they paid me to go to school there. The university, the institute paid me. And they wanted to continue to pay me to get my PhD, and they wanted to hire me as a professor. I left, and I had developed some technology, and I realized in a kind of a daydream, I saw a headline that read, "Millions Dead," and then it said a weapon was deployed by the U.S. military that killed millions of people, and I realized in that daydream, I knew that they had used my technology to develop that weapon. And I thought, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that. I thought that this computer-aided design technology I had worked on would help make more efficient cars and better products. I didn't think about the military use of it. So I had a lot of soul searching to do there, and I decided that I couldn't do it. I decided to drop out, shelve the technology, and instead get closer to nature. And in my process of connecting with nature, I rode around the United States on a bicycle for a few years, and I ended up in Maui, Hawaii.
And now, how'd you do that? You must have gotten on a boat.
Yeah, I didn't ride my bike over there.
No, if you did that across water, you're something.
Right. So, I actually flew over there. But I was pedaling all the way. No.
That's right. With a bike in the cargo bin or something like that.
Right. I did bring my bike over there, and I did ride it, but I found that the road systems there were very dangerous, and with this crystal meth, the ice heads driving around at night, I just decided I can't even do that anymore. It's just too dangerous. So I started hitchhiking, and then I eventually bought a car used that. But I spent a lot of time, and I still live in a little cabin in a jungly area, and there's beautiful waterfalls around. And I connected with nature and really realized that this intuition, where these answers come from. I asked myself one day, where do I get all these answers? You know, I had a couple classes at MIT that were with professors that had authored the textbook and were considered the world-renowned experts. And I corrected them, and they admitted I was right. I was like, where is that coming from? How can I know more than them, and I don't even study, you know? So I asked myself, because I found that the way the answers came was I would read the question on the test, and then I would think to myself, how do I do that? And then the answer would come, and I would do it. It would be right. So I asked myself, where are these answers coming from? And the answer that came was from your heart.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. My heart's a pump. You know, it couldn't come from my heart. Well, over the years, I continued to investigate this and try to understand it more deeply. And the answers came, and I finally, after one real powerful revelation, which showed me this three-part consciousness, the conscious mind in the head, in the cerebral cortex, and then the subconscious mind in the gut, in the enteric nervous system, and then the soul, a kind of God consciousness in your heart. And then my girlfriend gave me a couple books that she had. She said, these books are too heady for me. Maybe you'd like them. And one was about heart transplants. This neuropsychologist who worked with heart transplant patients, Dr. Paul Purcell, he wrote the book called The Heart's Code. And he found that people that received a new heart, that their personality changed. And
for the better or for the worse?
Well, you know, it depends on the donor, because their personality would become like
whoever the donor was. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, and in one case, there was a particular case, he had a special opportunity where they did what's called a domino transplant. They took the heart from a man that had a had bad lungs and gave it to a guy that needed a new heart. And they took a heart and lungs from someone that passed away and put it in the fellow that had the bad lungs. They call that a domino transplant. So the donor of the one heart was still alive with a new heart and lungs. And then they Dr. Paul Parcell got the two wives and the two men together, and they all talked about the what had happened and the changes in personality. And at the end of the discussion, the wife of the man who received just the heart said, "My Fred got a personality transplant." And they found that, you know, cigarette smoking, the type of food you eat, the type of sexuality you enjoy, all these kinds of things are affected by the heart. Now, they also had a special case where this one woman, she got a heart transplant from another gal that had been murdered.
Oh, gosh.
Well, she ends up having dreams and memories of the murderer.
It's almost as if the heart is like a brain, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so she goes to the police and she tells them that, you know, this is who the murderer is. They investigate. They find the murder weapon and they convict the guy. Now, obviously, those memories were not in the brain. They were in the heart. So what is going on here? And so, you know, it takes a big change in perspective to understand this, because people think the brain creates consciousness. But we know today that it doesn't. There's extensive research that shows that the mind works outside of the brain. There's this fella, I have the research.
Yeah,
here.
But no, we know that for sure. The mind does act outside of the brain.
Yeah, because of the people that have died and been, they have the cardiac arrest, right? And there's the this fellow that Van Lohman. He, for 20 years, they studied these people in Europe in a set of hospitals with trained staff. And he's written a book, and he says that the brain operates outside. I mean, the mind operates outside of the brain. Now, there's another guy, Jim Tucker, and he wrote a book. He did 50 years of research on reincarnation people. Now, these kids, they find a child that says that they remember being alive as another person. They interview this child very carefully. They get all the data. Then they go and investigate this situation and find that there was a person that meets all these criteria of the information the child remembered. They validated 2,500 reincarnations. They've uploaded 2,000 of those onto a database for other people to investigate and look at that data. So obviously the brain doesn't have the memory of this person that passed away. That couldn't be transferred to the child through a physical means. So what's going on here? It seems that consciousness is not created by the physical brain. And what now is coming out is that consciousness is at the foundation of the universe, not matter. It's the whole thing's being turned right side up. It's kind of like going back to the old days where they talked about spirits and gods and goddesses that controlled things. And what we're finding is there is some kind of consciousness at the foundation. And the first scientist that really started to get into this was Max Planck, who is the father of quantum physics.
Right, and a genius.
Yeah, and he said in 1931, he said, "I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness." Now, more recently, Dr. Robert Lanza, which I heard you had him on your show.
Yeah, he's been on. And hold on, George. We're going to hit a break here. Let's come back and talk more about this, The Magnificent Soul, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, a month ago, Scottsdale, Arizona, our live event. Come on by. We're looking forward to it. They've got some nice seats still available, so don't be left out. I'll tell you how you can get your seats in just a moment. But in Scottsdale, it's April 21st at the Virginia G. Piper Theater. Those of you out in that area, you know where I'm talking about. And we're going to have a live band there, special guests, a meet and greet. Just a great event. It's much what like we did in Salt Lake City a month ago. So take advantage of it. Scottsdale, Arizona, April 21st. How do you get tickets? Well, you go to coasttocoastam.com. Up in the top, it says events. Click that. It'll open up like that. It's also in the carousel reel, as is the Las Vegas event. That's June 9th at the Silverton Casino in Las Vegas. Come on out for that. Take a vacation. Come on out from wherever you are and come out to Las Vegas June 9th. Tickets available there by clicking events at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Walter Chez with us, his book, The Magnificent Soul. And George, I noticed on the book, you've got a reality founded on consciousness, and then you've got another version on Amazon with the subtitle, The Art of Living in a World Founded on Consciousness. Why'd you change it?
My friends said that the original subtitle was a little confusing, and I worked on a new subtitle, and so the new one, I sent you the original, so you got one of the few that got printed that way.
That's right. I got the one I can sell later on eBay for millions, right?
Right, that's it, yeah. But the new one, The Art of Living in a World Founded on Consciousness, is a little more descriptive. And you know, with this consciousness thing, people might wonder, if the brain doesn't create consciousness, then what's the brain for? What does it do? And so I wondered that myself and asked my soul, magnificent soul in my heart, to explain that to me. And what came was that the brain is like a multi-pin connector. You know, like when we have the motherboard of a computer and you plug that huge connector with all the pins into it, and that connects the computer brain to the keyboard and the screen and the microphone and all those things, right? Well, when a piece of consciousness goes and rests itself inside the brain, it is able to connect to the neurological network of the human being and feel the sensations, the smell, touch, taste, all those sensations come into that consciousness, and then it's also able to drive the arms and legs and be a human being. So when a conscious mind places itself in the human brain, then it is able to operate the human being. And you might wonder, well, where does that... And then there's the consciousness in the gut, the subconscious mind in the gut enteric nervous system. And those are working together back and forth, and there's bidirectional communication. And that's been documented in Scientific American. There's an article about the gastrointestinal brain. And they're saying that the one in the gut is actually sending more signals up the spinal cord than the head brain is sending signals down. So there's two portions, and one is emotional and one is intellectual. The head is intellectual and the gut is emotional. Now, this split consciousness makes us gullible and feeble. Our conscious mind and our gut are really not very smart, and they're split so that they don't really understand what's going on, get confused and are afraid of events that are unfolding, like the ones you spoke about at the beginning of the show. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on, and people are worried about it. And it makes sense to be worried about it. But when you engage your heart, when you open your heart wide, when you fall in love deeply, the world looks perfect. Even though this stuff is going on, mm-hmm. somehow you know that everything is fine. And the superconscious soul has the intellect and the emotions combined into a whole consciousness. The wholeness is what we call holy. It's divine. There's actually research at the HeartMath Institute in Boulder Creek, California, that discovered the heart, or something in the heart, knows the future 3 to 5 seconds in advance.
That's amazing. How does this happen?
There's something about time that we don't really understand. And the director of research, Roland McCarty, he says that these results have been duplicated at labs around the world, validating that this is true. They, you know, I could go through explaining the experiment, but we don't have a lot of time, so I'm just going to, people can look at the book and, you know, find out more details about that, or they can go to the HeartMath Institute, which is, they have a website. There's also research from Stanford that shows that there's an infallible voice that comes out of the heart. And there's radio waves between 250 and 1,000 cycles per second that shoot up from the heart into the middle of the head. Now, in the middle of the head, we have a gland called the pineal gland, which is an eyeball, it's a small eyeball, that's connected to the limbic layer of the brain, which is the middle layer of the brain. Now, it's also the receptors in that eyeball are wired into the visual cortex. So when these radio waves come up from the heart, they might form an image, and that image is seen in your visual cortex. And if it sends up an idea or words, then the limbic layer translates that and feeds it into the cerebral cortex so that you have this intuitive idea, oh, that's it. I need to call this person, or mm-hmm. I need to go here, or I need to do this thing, but I don't really know why.
So we think, most people think, all of this is done in the brain. You're saying, no, it's being done in the heart.
Yeah. The intuition comes from the heart. In fact, it's interesting that Einstein, I have some quotes from Einstein that will just blow you away. Here's one of them. The state of mind which enables a man to do work of this kind, theoretical physics, is akin to that of the religious worshiper or the lover. The daily effort comes from no deliberate intention or program, but straight from the heart.
Interesting.
This is Einstein.
How would he know that?
That same way I did. He was tuned into his intuition, and that's why he was a genius. You know, it's interesting, the word genius, if you look at the origin of the word genius, it means a spirit that attends a person from birth. That spirit is the soul in your heart. That's the genius. It's not in your mind. It's in your heart. Now, Einstein has another, here's another quote. The intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift.
If people are caring people, do you think that originates from the heart as well?
Absolutely. I think that the conscience comes from the heart. And the romantic promptings also come from the heart. You know, like love at first sight. Well, you have no reason to love this person. You just feel it. You feel it, and you don't know why.
Yeah.
The things that come that you don't know why they come, and they just kind of appear in you, you know, and you just know it, that's coming from here.
Well, it's interesting that somebody who is somewhat evil, let's say, people will say that person is heartless.
Exactly. Now, this is where we get into an issue that the pineal gland is this eyeball that receives this information. But over half the population, the pineal gland is turned to bone. It's calcified. And it's interesting that the heart has a direct supply of blood to the pineal gland, even though the rest of the brain is protected by the blood-brain barrier. The heart feeds blood directly into the pineal gland, and it's the only gland that is singular and centered. All the other glands are mirrored and dualistic, have a left and right kind of pattern. So there's something special about this pineal gland, and why is it the only thing that has a direct supply of blood, and it's in the middle of the head? Like, why? That's so strange that there would be a vein going right into the middle, but yet the rest of the brain is protected. So there, I think that what I've gotten, I've asked, how does this happen? And what's interesting, I looked at the data on pineal gland calcification, and it turns out that children before puberty, almost none of them are calcified. It's less than 2%. But once puberty hits, by 17 years old, 40% of Americans have calcified pineal glands. What happens? I asked, and I got that, you know, they get hurt. They fall in love, and they get their heart broken. And they decide, oh, man, I'm not going to listen to that anymore. I don't want to get my heart broken again. That was too painful. Or maybe they have an opportunity to glorify their ego. Maybe they see something that they could pick up, a very expensive diamond ring or something very valuable, and their conscience says, don't do it. It's not going to turn out good. And you just know you shouldn't do it. But somebody's going to say, well, I need the money. I don't care. I want the money, and I want to get the power.
You've coined a phrase called triality of human consciousness. What does that mean?
That's the head, heart, and gut. So you've got these three pieces of consciousness, and triality is a advancement beyond duality. Triality is where duality has a positive and a negative. And what people don't realize is in the very center of every duality is a combination of both. Like if we take, for example, elevation, you've got the top of the highest mountain, Mount Everest, and at the bottom of the ocean, you've got the Marianas Trench. And those two polarities are the top and the bottom, but in the middle, you've got the coastline and the beach. And the beach has the water and the land meeting, and the beach has surf, and it's so playful and fun, it's better than the top of Mount Everest or the bottom of the Marianas Trench. But for some reason, people get drawn to those polarities. They're kind of seductive. The extremes are seductive, and the middle seems kind of mediocre, but actually it's the best. An example that everybody, you know, finds fascinating is a rainbow. You know, when you have a rainstorm that's dark and is approaching, and behind you is the sun setting, then the sun shining on that rainstorm produces a rainbow, and that rainbow is just gorgeous. And that is one example of a case where you just know that's the most special thing, right in the middle. So in the middle of us, we have our superconscious soul, the magnificent soul that is the genius and knows the best thing for us. But many people turn away from their soul because of heartbreak, because of whatever reason, sure. And then they get polarized into their head and gut, the opposite polarity.
Let me ask you this, George. Medically, when someone has a heart attack, and I'm not talking about clogged arteries or anything like that, but does emotion or anything like that have anything to do with a heart attack?
I don't really have an answer for that. I haven't looked deeply into that particular situation with the heart attack. I don't know what to say how to answer that question.
But it could.
It could. Yeah. It seems like the person is avoiding their heart. They're stuck in their polarities. They're probably, you know, gripped by the extreme of emotion that's in their gut. And they're pulled out of, and the heart's just like, this guy is so far off base that I'm just going to put him out of his misery. You know, what happens to the people that have calcified pineal glands is they go towards extremes. And the Buddha noticed that when you go towards an extreme, you suffer. And so Buddhism is an intellectual philosophy that you pick a middle path and you disregard your desires and you just go down the middle And if you do that, you're going to suffer less. So if the Buddha is getting you to use your mind where your soul would do that job, but if you've turned away from your soul and you've said, no, I'm going to steal that anyway, I'm going to not love anymore, I'm not going to listen to you anymore, then I think the soul calcifies the pineal gland and propels the person into one polarity or another, away from the central core. The central core, I call it the quintessential core, in the middle of a duality. That's where the best stuff is.
Isn't it interesting that all the writings of the ancients that had to do with the heart reflect what you've been talking about tonight, George? You know, when you talk about, you know, I come to you with a heavy heart. I mean, all these references toward the heart are all emotional.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the heart has definitely got a lot of emotions, but it's also identified as being the genius. Aristotle said, intuition is the source of scientific knowledge. Steve Jobs said, intuition is more powerful than intellect. Frank Lloyd Wright said, the heart is the chief feature of a functioning mind.
Is it possible that the mind, the brain, and the heart are working in tandem?
Well, there's a relationship, a very important relationship. That's the most important relationship that exists, is the relationship between your ego mind and the God within, the divine consciousness in your heart. I had an experience about a year and a half ago where I fell in love with my soul. I had a little practice in the morning where I would thank these different items I would make my smoothie out of. Mm-hmm. I live on a property where there's bananas and coconuts, and I would harvest my own coconuts and bananas and make this smoothie. And I would say thank you to the banana tree and the coconut tree. And then I'd say, thank you, Great Spirit. And then I'd say, dear soul in my heart, thank you. And one day I said that, dear soul in my heart, thank you. And then my intuitive thing said, I love you. And I thought, I love you? Wait, did I say that? Or did it say that? And then I thought, wait a minute, that's a great idea. Why don't I, my ego mind, love my soul? If I can love my soul, which is like my parent, it's kind of a guardian or parent, sometimes called the guardian angel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really not above you, it's inside of you. And if you can love that, you've got a love that can last your whole life.
All right, we're coming back next hour. More about the magnificent soul, and we'll take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.